go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Ben Bolin here with Daredevil Auto Editor Scott Benjamin. Scott, always a pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm outstanding today. How are you doing, Ben?
Oh, you know me, man. I am a productive person. That's probably how it'd be described if we were in a Mad Lib and there was a blank space in front of, well, okay. I do my best is my point.
Yeah, everybody around here says how productive you are. That's right.
All right. So I was on the way to work today thinking about, of course, how I could be productive. And then it occurred to me, you know, midway between shaving as I was balancing a donut and a latte and reading the news section and the sports section at the same time, that this would be so much easier and maybe even a little safer if I don't know, wasn't doing those things. Or, you know, at first I was thinking maybe I shouldn't be doing all this stuff in the car. Then I thought, well, I can do it if someone else is driving. And then I thought, what if the car drove itself? And so I wanted to ask you today, can we do that yet?
Well, not really, but I have one question for you. Why don't you just take the train?
You know what? That is a fair question. And I am going to give you a good answer that I just made up. Okay. The train has predetermined routes, and I sometimes, you know, I go a lot of places. I'm what you would call both a mover and a shaker, and that means that sometimes I might need to be someplace where the train doesn't go, and I might need to be there more quickly than the train can get me. So,
okay, well, I understand your concerns, but as far as going hands-free, I don't know about that. I don't think that's possible right now. There's, you know, variations of that we do have right now, and we could talk about those if you want.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Lay it on me.
All right, well, maybe the greatest one or the best example of this would be adaptive cruise control.
What is adaptive cruise control?
Adaptive cruise control, it's just what it sounds like. Everybody is pretty much familiar with cruise control.
Yeah.
Adaptive cruise control adapts to the situation that the car is in. So if you set the cruise control at, say, a certain speed.
Sure, like and, 50 miles an hour.
Okay, sure, 50. You want to maintain 50 miles an hour, and that's what a cruise control will do. But if, let's say, the car in front of you slams on its brakes suddenly or suddenly slows down even just a little bit, the gap in between you and the car in front of you, it lessens.
Yeah.
So adaptive cruise control kind of maintains that gap. It adjusts based on the traffic. So I don't know. It's a smart system. It allows you to either maintain a speed or it allows you to maintain a distance in time, a time interval even.
Oh, so I could say, for instance, keep me at 50 miles an hour as long as I am always, 10 seconds away from this other car? Or?
That's right. 10 seconds would be a long time on the highway, but if you do, let's say, 2 or 3 seconds, that's probably more reasonable. And, the car will speed up and slow down as necessary in order to maintain that gap. Yeah.
Well, I see what you're saying here, Scott. I don't want to sound negative or anything, but I'm getting the feeling you don't think this is a good idea.
No, you're exactly right. I don't think a total hands-free system is a good idea at all. There's just no way that it's going to work. I don't think that. I shouldn't say there's no way it's going to work, but I'm going to say that it's not likely to work anytime soon. And the reason is that everybody would have to be on the same system in order for something like this to work.
See, and that's what some people who advocate the idea of driverless car systems, they say that it would make it safer in general. There would be less accidents is the main thing I think they point out, and maybe even less traffic.
Well, that could be true, but then again, everybody, again, has to be on the same system. Every vehicle would have to be identical or, you know, at least be operating on the same system in order for this to work. There's just other way around it. Because you can't have a car driving through a city that is driverless when everybody else is not on a driverless system. And the reason is that, you know, everybody's going to be trying to avoid that car or trying to adapt to what that car is doing, or the car is going to be trying to adapt to them, and it's just not going to work right. But if you got two vehicles that are on the same system or 1,000 vehicles or 10,000 vehicles that are doing the same thing, that's different. That's when the system's really going to work.
Okay, so are you saying that one of the chief disadvantages of these kind of systems is that one person driving their own car could spoil it for everybody else?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's the human element, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So you've got, you know, humans react differently than machines do to certain situations, of course, and they're trying to work on that. That's what's, you know, the whole idea behind driverless systems,
right,
really.
Right.
But you're in a driverless system, a hands-free system, you're entirely removing the human element from driving the vehicle, and that's something that has been entirely up to humans up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be completely different. That's right.
Have you ever seen, there's this movie Minority Report, and I know, of course, at How Stuff Works, we're not plugging any of these movies. They're not giving us any money to say anything about them. But I want to point out there's a great chase scene in there where there's a driverless car system, and the main character has to override the system and drive by himself. And he goes through this tremendous car chase and causes several catastrophic accidents. Is that what you're talking about?
I've seen that movie, yeah, and I know the scene you're talking about, and it's a great scene. And I think that's something that's kind of like what you would see, yeah.
Wow.
You know, if you get somebody that decides they want to, you know, navigate their own car through this maze of driverless cars, that's what could happen, yeah.
And I guess I could see that very easily.
And the reverse would be true of, let's say, a car that is a driverless car trying to navigate through all these other vehicles that are not driverless vehicles, if that makes sense. It's
kind of the opposite
of that. So, I don't know. I just don't find it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work that way.
And I guess, you know, I started off this conversation very optimistic about this. I had really thought that I had found an innovative way to save a good 15 to 30 minutes for people, but it sounds like I didn't think this all the way out. I didn't fully articulate it. Because while you're talking to me, another thing that occurred to me, if these are all under one central system, what happens if there's a monkey wrench thrown in that system, right?
Oh, like a power outage or something like that?
That's a great example.
That's one. You know, something like that where, you know, suddenly there's no power to these vehicles, or, you know, everybody is stuck in the same place that they are right then. There's no one's moving anywhere.
Or a hacker, Scott. What about a hacker?
Hackers are possible, sure. They're always possible. You think that you're safe, but, you know, as we've seen in the past, there's ways to get around everything. So another thing that maybe haven't thought about is the expense, tremendous expense that would be involved with something like this, because you're talking about doing away with our current road systems.
What do you mean, though?
Well, I mean, if nothing else, they're going to be, you know, would have to embed wires or devices or, you know, something like that. You know, the entire city infrastructure would have to change in order for something like this to work.
And
not only would everybody have to get new vehicles, but, you know, the city would have to adapt as well.
That's a pretty good point. I didn't think about that.
Big one.
Okay. Big one. Well, I'm going to, you know what, I am still going to stick with some optimism here. I'm a glass half full kind of person, you know, as are you.
Got reason to be half full, I guess, because there are situations where driverless systems are good.
Oh, lay it on me.
Okay, well, there's a couple I can think of, really. One is kind of I want to call it recreational, but I don't think it really is. I think there's more to it than that, really. It's the DARPA Urban Challenge. Maybe you're familiar with it. I don't know.
Would you refresh my memory?
Okay, the DARPA Urban Challenge. That's where they take a driverless vehicle, unmanned, no one's in the car at all, navigate through a course that could be several miles long. I mean, I think in, you know, one year it was 135 miles long, this
really?
Course. Yeah, with various challenges, you know, stop signs, intersections with other unmanned vehicles, houses, trees.
So it's a race. It's a race between these robotically steered cars.
It is a race, but it's also very controlled, very methodical race. It's the control is really the big point here. They want it to be safe. And that's the goal, is trying to figure out how to make these vehicles safe. But they really do an excellent job of it. The top prize is something like $2 million. It's really a great competition.
So what you said there was one more?
Yeah, there's one more situation, I think, where something like this pays off, and that's automated durability test tracks.
What are automated durability test tracks?
It's a mouthful, but what they are really is proving grounds for auto manufacturers.
So
let's say you're trying to test a like a Jeep vehicle, maybe something, you know, with a pretty rugged suspension.
Okay.
You want to really put it through the test, but you know, maybe you're worried about the drivers being able to you know, stand up to that kind of punishment. That,
oh, you know, sure, okay, that, without getting an impacted spine or something.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, because, you know, they do have to test these cars. I mean, it's not just a couple of hours of testing. You're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of miles of testing for these vehicles. And one way that they can do it is with an automated system. They've got, you know, tracks that, you know, have, like we talked about, embedded wires and, you know, systems that allow the vehicle to drive without a driver. So they're unmanned vehicles, and they can really put them through their paces, you know, significantly higher level than they could if there was a driver involved.
Okay, so go over the rough suspension, take the high speed hairpin turns.
Well, yeah, Ben, that's exactly what they do, because they've already got this infrastructure built, and, you know, they're able to punish the vehicles to the point, you know, where they can take, you know, right to the very limit of what the vehicle can withstand, really. You know, the driver, you remove the human element, and, you know, they're able to just push it that much more.
Okay, so this goes back to the human element again, mm-hmm. and both of these situations, I guess, are places where the human element is really more of a hindrance.
That's right. In those situations, well, actually, the automated test track is one. The other one is kind of, like I said, not recreational, but it's more of a...
That's a military thing, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. It is.
Okay.
It is, yeah. But removing the human element in this case is a good thing for the automated test track, yeah.
Now, I had heard, weren't you telling me earlier, as far as, I guess, civilian things go, there are some cars that can park themselves? I was really interested in this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, cars that park themselves. They've had those for a little while now, but they are... pretty advanced, the systems are. They can do something that, you know, most people don't like to do on their own. A lot of people don't like to parallel park.
Oh, parallel parking.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate it.
It's parallel parking.
Oh, man, I am so bad at parallel parking. If I had a nickel for every time I wished my car would parallel park itself, I'm not good at math, but I would have at least 15 cents today.
That's not too bad then, really. But... honestly, the systems are incredible. They really do a good job. I
mean, so they work.
They really do. Yeah, you have to find, you know, they have to meet certain, you know, parameters for them to work. You know, you have to find a spot that's 6 feet longer than the car that you're driving.
That's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I know.
That's never going to work, though.
I understand. You know, it does work. It really does. If you're fortunate enough to find a spot that's 6 feet longer than your SUV that, you know, the system is in, it will work.
What's the appeal with that, though?
Well, the appeal is that, you know, if you're not good at it, mm-hmm. you just let the system go and it does it. And it really does work. I mean, you get to the point where, you know, you pull it to where it has to go, you set the system as it should be set, and you take your hands off the wheel and the car does it.
So is that like the cruise control? Are there lasers or radar or some sort of camera?
Exactly. There are sensors that determine the location of the vehicle, the curb location, the vehicle in front of you and behind you. It knows when to cut the wheel. It knows when to keep it off the curb a little bit. So, and it's a great system, really.
It sounds like an expensive system. I mean, that's my first reaction when I hear it, honestly. A little bit inconvenient, yes. A little bit convenient, also. But how much would this, do you know if this would be, it doesn't sound like a basic factory.
Well, no, it's not. Right now, it's kind of on the top-end cars, as you'd expect. But that's the way we see things happen in the automotive industry. You know, they start out the top, and they kind of trickle down into some of the lower-end vehicles. Maybe not lower-end, but, you know, the
right.
more common vehicles, I guess, would be a better way to say that.
Sure. But, starts at the Bentleys, ends at the Civics.
Yeah, something
right?
like that. Okay. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of self-parking systems right now.
So it sounds like one of the main problems we have implementing this whole thing is the cost, right?
The cost is always a concern. That's right. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's a major concern no matter what you're doing in automotive. Cost is a big deal.
But
yeah,
even if money was no object. You still think this is a pretty bad idea, huh?
I actually do, yeah. I mean, I just think that, you know, overall, everybody is not going to conform to this. And I don't think that cities are going to want to put, you know, you just said cost isn't a factor. But
right.
I really don't see cities completely changing their entire roadway mm-hmm. systems to meet this mm-hmm. requirement.
You know, I'm nodding like this because I think you're winning me over. I think I might be coming over to your side of the argument, Scott, because it just occurred to me that if there is this central system that we talked about earlier, if there is this central system controlling the location and destination and even the speed of every car in the system, if someone decided, for instance, that no one should be able to go to Nebraska, then they would just be able to enter that option in, right?
That's right. Yeah, it would be kind of like a, I guess, like a no-fly zone, really, would be.
Wow.
You know, they could restrict certain areas, and you just wouldn't be able to go there. You'd lose some of the freedom that you have with your own vehicle. That's for sure.
I don't like that.
Well, no one does.
So maybe are we just not ready for driverless cars?
That's probably right. Yeah, I mean, I never say never. Because, you know, this may happen at some point, you know, to some level. You know, we're seeing little bits of it now with adaptive cruise control and the self-parking and, you know, things like the DARPA Urban Challenge. They prove that it's possible. It really is possible. I just don't see everybody conforming to this in the future.
I know. Okay. So maybe it's safe for me to hold on to my naive optimism about this. I'm gonna say that I'm on your side right now. I think driverless cars are a bad idea. You've won me over.
Excellent.
I'm not sure though, Scott, in 5 or 10 years, you know, we both might change our tune.
Yeah, maybe. There's some projections that, you know, it's coming, but they've been saying that since, you know, the 1939 World Fair or something like that, you know, where, you know, in 1960 all the cars are going to be, you know, on these automated systems and, you know, the world of the future. But I guess here we are nearly 50 years past that and we haven't seen it yet.
Thanks so much for breaking this down for us, Scott.
Oh, no problem. Anytime I can help, I'm glad to do it.
Thanks for joining the podcast today. We'll see you again next time.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.